that ED voice really grabbed on to the fact that, oh, I couldn't eat very much because I was working so hard and with barely any breaks. And not to mention that chefs are, in my case, I would say that my body was functioning as an athlete's body would, because of how much work I was doing in the kitchen and being on my feet all day long. We really do need to be fueling our bodies for that. And I unfortunately was not. So yeah, my ED voice loved that and really grabbed onto that.
Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castanini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's show. I have a feeling a lot of you are going to relate to this show, like maybe you relate to a lot of them, but in this episode, I'm talking with dietitian Chrissy Overstreet, whose story, like I said, I think one is so many people will quietly recognize themselves in. Chrissy shares how disordered eating patterns began in childhood, like, again, so many of you listening, but how her body image wounds and bullying shaped the way she saw herself, and how her struggles stayed hidden in plain sight for years. Not because they weren't painful, but because they looked so, quote unquote, normal in the world around her. We're going to talk about what it's like when an eating disorder doesn't fit the stereotype people expect. When you're functioning, achieving, going to college, grad school, building a career, maybe even helping other people, all while food and body thoughts are taking up way too much space in your mind. So this conversation is really honest, nuanced, and deeply validating. And what I love most is that it just doesn't stop at how hard it was. It also speaks to what recovery can actually look like. More freedom, more awareness, more trust in your body, and more room in your life for things that actually matter. So if any of you out there have ever thought, hey, maybe I'm failing at food, or this isn't that bad, or this is just probably how most women think, then this episode, it's really for you. So I'm going to go get Chrissy and we're going to start this conversation. So sit back, relax, and if you have any comments about the episode after, DM me and let me know. I'd love to hear from you. All right, Chrissy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. So I'm just so interested in like your journey and your story. So I'm just going to leave it to you in terms of where you'd like to start sharing in terms of like your life. I don't know if there's any particular spot you want to start at. So I'm going to leave that to you.
Sure. I guess I could start in like childhood or like adolescence is when my disordered eating patterns, if you will, I guess, began. I remember my grandparents used to buy the like different varieties of the Little Debbie cakes, right? And keep them in, or I knew where they were, and I'd go over there every day after school and have some Little Debbie cakes. And I remember hitting a certain point where this like self-awareness came online. And because of everything maybe that I'd been like conditioned with at that point, I started restricting myself and being like, ooh, I shouldn't have these, which I was around like 10 years old. So it's just so interesting to think that a 10-year-old is having those thoughts, but I know I'm not alone in that. And then, yeah, shortly after that, maybe a couple years after, my grandmother was diagnosed with cancer, cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of research at that time coming out around green tea. And I just remember green tea being in the headlines and being like so fascinated with like the health benefits that were being purported around green tea, and the interest in nutrition sparked there, I guess you could say. And I remember like really pressing my grandma, you need to drink your green tea, please. And she enjoyed green tea. She enjoyed tea. So she was happy too. But I don't think that I realized until I later on that a lot of my restriction and desire to control or have a sense of control or create more safety, more of a felt sense of safety and groundedness was impacting and showing up in my relationship with food there, especially just again with this grandmother who I was really close with being diagnosed with cancer and her journey over a few years with that diagnosis. On top of that, I was very, very typical sort of like character traits that we tend to see in many individuals with eating disorders. So very type A, people pleaser, perfectionist. I was a very high achiever and expected to achieve. And also I was bullied in school. I was not part of the popular crowd. I didn't have a ton of friends. I had a few close friends and was bullied mostly just by the boys at my school and at my high school. And that definitely impacted like my self-worth and self-confidence and all of that.
You remember like for you, was that the first time you got bullied in high school, or was this like an ongoing thing from early childhood?
Honestly, it's hard to remember. I was reflecting on this earlier. I think that maybe there was some light picking in like elementary school, and maybe it progressed a little more in middle school, but high school and like ninth grade was where, maybe it was more like eighth grade, ninth grade, where it was the worst. Yeah, because I'm picturing like the rooms that it happened in, and one of them was at the middle school now that I'm remembering. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's such a developmentally like important time too, when you're forming your identity and peers are really important. And I'm so sorry, bullying is horrible. I don't know if things still stick out in your head that like you were told or what that was like for you.
Yeah. I think for the boys that bullied me, they don't like the things that they said were so stupid. They don't, now I'm able to look back and be like, that was so like just ridiculous. And it wasn't like then it was very much the things that they were saying. Like they used to call me Chris the Man. I have no idea like where they got, like my dad, I'm named after my dad. I'm like, maybe that's where they got the connection. And Olga the bodybuilder. And mind you, I was like this lanky teen girl. At that time didn't play any sports or anything. So they were very misplaced, like words and phrases that they used or whatnot. So they don't really affect me at all today, but I remember that teenage me, and I feel for her and everything that she was navigating. Yeah. And then into high school, I think it died off after like 10th grade. It wasn't so bad anymore. Maybe they just became interested in other things. I guess they grew up a little bit. I don't know. Yeah. From high school, I'd always been really passionate about, actually, let me backtrack before I jump ahead. One of the other things, like I, obviously women in my fam, very, not obviously, but very common experience that a lot of women in my family would make comments about their bodies or other people's bodies. And I have an aunt that was like a second mom to me, who has yo-yo dieted her entire life. And so all of those things impacted my relationship with food and how I perceived like what bodies were supposed to look like and what was quote unquote good versus bad around food. And developing that like moral association with different foods and bodies, and also what that meant about our health based on our body shape and size, which is definitely interesting too, to contrast that now with everything that like my one grandmother was going through, who I would say is interestingly like also was someone who I can't ever remember commenting on her body or other people's bodies. But through her treatment, her cancer treatment and everything, struggling to eat enough was like a huge part of her journey. So it's so fascinating to think about like those parallels sometimes. But Yeah, I've always been, I've been a foodie for a long time. And that's actually largely thanks to my aunt that I just mentioned. She got me into baking and cooking alongside her. And I certainly cooked with my grandmothers and my mom as well. And then in freshman year of high school, I decided I wanted to start cooking more dinners for my family and experimenting in the kitchen and getting to try different things because we ate the same thing all the time each week. And I was getting tired of it and really fell in love with cooking and decided then that I wanted to go to culinary school. So that is what led me to Charlotte. I did my undergrad at Johnson & Wales here in 2010. I started in 2010, finished in 2014. And there's a lot of ego tied up in the chef world, in the restaurant industry. And I can see how that also played a role in this drive to achieve and be the best and be seen and acknowledged in ways that I hadn't really felt throughout those teenage years. So lots of long hours, 12-hour, 13-, 14-hour days sometimes, and only getting one break a day to sit down and eat. So otherwise it was just snacking. Common, yes. Not a fun time and very common in the restaurant industry, just very expected, I think, of chefs, especially who are not in a corporate setting. So the corporate settings, they do a little better with, I guess, like having HR policies in place to support and protect the employees a little bit better. But yeah, what I still didn't know at this time was that I was experiencing disordered eating or an eating disorder. And really that ED voice really grabbed onto the fact that, oh, I couldn't eat very much because I was working so hard and with barely any breaks. And not to mention that chefs are, in my case, I would say that my body was functioning as an athlete's body would because of how much work I was doing in the kitchen and being on my feet all day long. We really do need to be fueling our bodies for that. And I unfortunately was not. Yeah, my ED voice loved that and really grabbed onto that. And I knew at that through my, so this was like my early 20s, I knew that I had struggled with my body image. And even at my smallest, of course, was not comfortable in my body or with how it looked. However, I still did not recognize those eating disorder patterns that were occurring then, which started in adolescence, that like restrict binge cycle, hiding and eating foods in private, or like even hiding wrappers in the trash can so people couldn't see them or something. I didn't recognize any of those behaviors as, hey, something's off here. And I think I still at that time had this idea of the stereotype of what someone with an eating disorder looks like as underweight, which I was not and never hit the criteria for being medically underweight.
So if I could ask, go back. So when did you first start to feel like not comfortable in your body or that you wanted to change it? Was that in like middle school-ish?
Yeah, I would say adolescence. I always, even at my smallest, again, like I have always had a bit of a belly, and that tends to be a touchy point for so many people because of our societal conditioning. So I get it. And I'd, again, heard women in my family talk about bellies. And so that was an area of a tender point for me for a long time. And I'll admit, like, still is, if I were to let that voice run wild, that's the part it would pick out about my body is my belly. But yeah, I remember feelings of discomfort around my belly showing, being able to just notice that I have a fat pad on my lower stomach as a middle schooler and in high school. Yeah. And I can remember one of my best friends telling me that my other best friend had said something about me. She had overheard her saying something. And to this day, who knows if it almost felt like it was she was trying to provoke something. I don't know. I will never know ultimately what happened. But either way, whether this friend made it up or the friend really did say it, it was hurtful. It was a comment about my body. So that stuck with me for a long time.
Those messages so young can really have an impact for sure. And I'm sure people listening can relate. There's probably things that they heard that really stuck with them. And especially if it's a friend, my goodness, right? Because I don't know, like, from that, if you started to do anything like body checking, like comparing yourself to your peers, or you started to do anything like a lot of people lift their shirts up and start looking in the mirror or like weighing themselves or doing like other things. I don't know what kind of behaviors resulted from that for you, but.
Yeah, I always engaged in a lot of body checking. I still have to stop myself from body checking. That's a behavior that I couldn't tell you like when I haven't had a time when I've never done that. Obviously, I keep saying obviously, but I don't mean obviously. It's just a lot less frequent now. I'm much more aware of it and I'm much more at peace with my body, even though I don't love the way I look. I acknowledge and honor the fact that some people might never get there, especially with the continued inundation of diet culture and the thin ideal from the media and our society. Yes, definitely remember the body checking. I don't remember necessarily weighing myself as much at that age, but in my early 20s, certainly was tracking my weight more. And what's interesting too is I ended up working for a nutrition firm here in Charlotte while I was in grad school, because I wanted to get my foot in the door somewhere and just work in an admin position and get the feel for it. And that, I would say, was probably when I really started to recognize like this isn't normal. And also I was very disappointed in the fact that they didn't screen me for an eating disorder, nor did they recognize that my body image issues were not going to be solved by losing weight. So that sort of perpetuated the experience as well. And it took me finishing grad school to realize, oh, this, I have an eating disorder. It's not normal to be constantly going back and forth with myself and feeling so much shame and guilt and low self-worth over the types of food that I'm eating, and feeling these feelings of being like out of control around food and eating, you know, really large amounts in single settings when I'm not even hungry. So like,
did you even have any inkling or awareness that you were struggling with body image or with food at that point, like to the point where anyone else would have tuned into it?
I knew I was struggling with my body image. This was like in my mid 20s. Mm-hmm. And this is also when I started to see more around body image on social media and around like intuitive eating. Mm-hmm. And so that, coupled with the grad school education and learning about eating disorders, was really what like opened my eyes to, oh, this is what's going on for me. Thankfully, I began therapy in my second year of grad school, I want to say, and was able to unpack so much around those perfectionist tendencies and my self-worth and confidence, and really decoupling my self-worth with achievement, which was always really big for me. And that really guided me towards that was such a big first step towards healing. And that first therapist I saw her for a year. She was wonderful, but I did feel the need to go like deeper. And then I found another therapist who I was able to go deeper with and talk about more of these past traumas and things that had really stuck with me. Whereas the first one, we were working more on I'd say more like recent and present life things. So yes. Yeah. I never actually went to, I never did any sort of like residential or IOP or PHP program. Just thankfully for me, with the knowledge that I earned through grad school around eating disorders and what nutrient needs truly look like at a minimum. Mm-hmm. And through the work that I did in therapy, I was able to enter recovery.
That's amazing, because I know that's really hard to do. And if there's not that much information out there, it can get very confusing about, it sounds like for you too, you shared that certain foods brought on shame, or there was a lot of emotional and personal connection to certain foods. And I don't know, like, at what point you became aware of that. Oh, if I eat this, I feel this certain way, or I label myself of this, or like, when did that start for you?
I would say that really started again in like early adolescence, when I would like have a pack of little Debbie cakes and want another pack and be like, no, that's bad, I shouldn't do that. And then maybe having them another pack sometimes and being like, oh, why did I do that? That's I'm never going to achieve my goal if I continue this behavior. I actually recently came across, I can't remember what journal it was. I've had so many journals over the years, but I recently came across some old journal entries from, I want to say they were from like 7 years ago, excuse me. And just some of the things I wrote, you can do it, you'll achieve your goal. This is the plan. Eat, restrict this and eat more of this and move your body this many times, at least per week. And I was just like, man, like and even then I knew that I had those feelings around food, but it didn't piece together that was not normal to have these feelings around food so often and to feel this way about my body so often, where it was taking up so much of my brain space. Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Like, huh. Oh, go ahead.
No, it just seems like it's so interesting, right? To not even have a recollection that was so prevalent that you were journaling about it, about your day-to-day existence.
I think with all of the messaging that we receive, it's so easy to fall into this trap that like you're not doing something right, or when it comes to food or nutrition or moving your body, just because of all the messaging that's out there and these ideals that are perpetuated. And again, how much it was perpetuated in my family system. And that was just normal. That was my normal. I didn't know any different. So it's so unfortunate, because it does impact us, especially when it's coupled with some of those other like personality traits around like perfectionism and achievement and all of those fun things.
Well, yeah. And I'm wondering, when you said you were in therapy, was it difficult to let go of some of the perfectionism and achievement? Because on some level it's functional, right? It helps you get into grad school. It helps you succeed in your job. So I'm wondering, like, how was that for you to navigate?
Yeah, it was certainly challenging. And I still, those are patterns that still come up from time to time. And I have to like recognize, like, I have to catch myself. And there's more nuance here than you're like allowing for. I think that for me, I'm a very like logical thinker, a logical brain, and I can very much see like X plus Y equals Z in with certain situations, or why I have certain patterns. I know some of it is like my neurodivergence, and I know I'm able to recognize also like with the perfectionism, how much of that also was like because of expectations that were placed on me especially with school. So I think because I was able to identify those pieces, it was easier for me. And at the same time, I'm in a place now of recognizing where some of my needs weren't met, or these expectations were placed on me that were maybe a little more than needed. Also, just that like the way that I perceive something is my own experience. And so maybe that was never the way that the message was meant to be received, but that is how I received it. Right. And I think that honoring that is so important. And I think that, yeah, therapy really helped me to pull out those pieces and better understand why I thought the way I did, which helped me give myself so much more compassion and grace. I think it just helped me get there maybe quicker in some ways, which I'm really grateful for. But it's so interesting to see those patterns continue. Like, I try to be really self-aware and to continue, even though I'm not in therapy now, which honestly I might would be if it were more accessible to me right now, just as like sort of maintenance. It's nice to have somebody non-biased to check in with. But yeah, just how these other patterns show up around like even scarcity mindset and how that might have impacted some of my relationship with food, but also my relationship with achievement and survival ultimately is how my body perceived that, and how it really is largely in our society. We do have, many of us do have to work to survive. So that is very valid. Yeah. However, there's some things I've actually been working on within recent days, some patterns that have come up for me just around this sense of urgency and I would say. So not eating disorder related, but just more so mental health related, and just having to acknowledge those. And I'm really grateful to have the tools and awareness to be able to do that now, thanks to therapy.
Do you feel like there's barriers to getting treatment and finding therapy for yourself now?
For myself, there's definitely a financial barrier now. I'm not where I would like to be financially, and my practice has been a little bit slower, which is fine, because I truly feel like when my practice is slower, my personal spiritual beliefs are that the universe is giving me time to work on the other things that are important to me. So I'm using that time, right? Versus I never want to be in a place of burnout again where I'm like, I remember in grad school, literally, this is also probably because I suspect I have like auditory processing disorder, but locking myself in a closet because I could not focus with any sort of noise, and the family would be like getting together and I'm like, I have to get my work done. I have to go in here. Yeah. My brain just took a little like sidetrack there. But yeah, I think the barrier right now is a financial barrier. And that's such a barrier. That's such a huge barrier for so many people who need treatment. Is that financial barrier. I was part of a focus group recently that this graduate school intern is conducting some research right now on barriers to treatment and recovery for those with marginalized identities. Such an important conversation. So I am so hopeful that we will continue to move towards more better coverage and accessibility, but better, more comprehensive insurance coverage for mental health conditions, because it's still so lacking, especially with smaller plans, it seems.
I'm with you. It's been going on for so long. And yeah, so anyone listening maybe is going, I would like to get treatment too. I can't do it. There's so many hurdles. There's so many barriers. And it's a tough thing, and it's a bigger conversation than obviously on this podcast, but anyone listening, if you have any comments, please send them over. But I'm on the other side here providing treatment, and I'm frustrated for people who can't seek treatment or get it. And even for you, it's like, how did you even know that you needed therapy or that this was an issue, like that you had eating disorder, like thoughts or patterns or struggles to even seek help?
I think, again, my education around eating disorders, when we hit that part of the program in graduate school, I was like, oh, I check a lot of these boxes. And again, just like the overwhelming like amount of brain space that it took, how often I was thinking about my body and food and worrying about those two things. Okay. And just feeling that overwhelm and burnout in grad school, really, I was like, I'm not doing well. Like, I need to talk to somebody, was where it really began or hit me. And I think, and my husband has always been really supportive. We've been together for 12 years now. And so he's always been aware of my body image struggles because I had voiced those. I'm not as sure if he picked up on any of the eating behaviors before I started talking about them, but he was supportive for sure when I said, I need to talk to somebody because I'm not doing well. And yeah, I'm really grateful for that.
Because I do think it's confusing for people, maybe even people listening. It's, oh, it's me. I'm screwing up. I'm not doing this right. I'm not eating right. Other people seem to do it so easily. And I don't know your take on it, but it seems like social media clouds things a lot. And it's, oh, I just need to do this right. Or I need to eat this, or I need to do that. Or it's not a disorder. It's me. I'm the failure. And people are grasping at straws or trying to find the magic solution instead of looking at maybe actually I'm struggling with a disorder or an illness instead of it being something external to them. So I don't know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I think that is such a common experience. I would argue that we, again, are conditioned towards this like individualism, and just with all of the mixed messaging around nutrition out there and what looks nourishing, which of course varies body to some degree. But if I think what it boils down to is if you're feeling overwhelmed with food, that's a good indicator that talking to somebody could be really beneficial.
To your point, like you're saying you were journaling and it was like consuming your day to day and like your whole mindset. And that was your journal entry. It's
yeah.
That's not a diet. That's something else.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So like today, even as you sit with your day to day now, like how much would you say your mind is occupied with thinking about how much you're eating or like struggling with your body?
It's so rare. It's more like I'm diagnosed ADHD and I was a later life diagnosis. So I got diagnosed 2 years ago, really in order to start medication because I was like, I need some help. So I think for me now, it's more like that interceptive awareness, like not getting too sucked into like my work and remembering to take breaks because I do struggle with those hunger cues until they're like very loud. I have to start to recognize, I have to consciously practice recognizing, ooh, feeling a little sleepy, feeling a little jittery, feeling a little brain foggy, and or hey, I had a thought about food pop in my head. That means I'm starting to get hungry, even though my tummy's not rumbling yet. So I would say, yeah, I don't worry about what I eat at all anymore when I'm eating foods that maybe some people might argue are less nutrient rich or whatever it might be. Like I don't have any ties of I am good or bad because I ate this food. If I am thinking about food, like maybe I'm going out somewhere special and I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to eat because this is going to be yummy and this is going to be good and it's special. And I do have to, I have a 14-year-old and I do have to think about, oh, what's she going to eat here? What am I packing her? What's she going to have tomorrow for breakfast? Because she has her own sensory preferences. So those are the ways that I think about food now. And with the body stuff, I won't lie. I think lately it's been a little more at the front of my mind, not necessarily negatively, but just my clothes are not fitting as well as I would like them to. I probably need to buy some more clothes and I haven't been able to do that yet. I think I'm just a little more aware of it, like in that sense. Yeah, but nowhere near telling myself I'm ugly or that, like worrying about people looking at me in public, or looking at my body in public, or watching what I'm eating, or any of those concerns anymore, which is so nice because it frees up so much brain space for other things like taking care of my plants or going rollerblading, whatever it might be.
Yeah, no, that's so freeing. Absolutely. And because people ask like, what transitions, what changes, what does it look like when you're free of the disorder? And like exactly what you just mentioned. And instead of going, oh my gosh, my clothes aren't fitting the same. Oh, I have to change XYZ with what I'm doing or eating. It's no, I'm just going to go buy different clothes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Normal.
Absolutely. I think another, I just was thinking too, another thing that comes up is like, I have so much more awareness around if I am starting to feel that a little more critical of how I look, I'm able to pause and be like, what else is going on here today? Mm-hmm. I actually had somebody make a comment about my body recently who I used to work with. And I guess I would say is a friend, although it's not like we keep in touch or anything. I just see him from time to time when I go by the restaurant. And he made a comment about my body. I have a feeling he meant it in a good way, but that was not how my brain took it in the moment. And I came home and was very upset. I cried. And afterwards, I was like, I haven't had lunch yet. Mm. I've been stressed lately. I have all these other things going on. This is not about my body. And sure enough, felt so much better after just having a meal. And it wasn't like I haven't had lunch yet. It was like I've been out busy running around and like we've gotten to the point of no return here. We really need some food now.
Yeah.
So yeah, those moments still happen, but being able to navigate through them so much more seamlessly and having the tools to resource and support ourselves through when those thoughts do pop up for us is just, again, so much so transformational and just gives you so much of your life back ultimately.
Yeah. So well said, like that awareness and insight to say, like, okay, what, why am I having these thoughts now? Is it about this or is it about something else? Totally to your point. That's amazing. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things I love helping people with is guiding them back to that awareness and helping people restore the trust in their bodies. And also, of course, like meeting, I think it's so important, like every person is, we do all have different lived experience and like honoring and different lives and honoring where we're at in our life and how much capacity, what our capacity looks like and how that fluctuates on different days, especially for neurodivergent folks. And all of those pieces are part of the puzzle and recovery journeys as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's definitely not a linear experience, and everybody's got their own path and journey, which is why I so appreciate you coming on and sharing yours, because someone may come on here and share their journey, their story, and somebody may listen to what you shared and go, oh my gosh, I relate to that, or that was something that clicks for somebody. And that's the whole point. And I don't know what it was like for you going through this, but I know for me, I never heard anybody share anything about what was going on for them. And it took so long for me to realize, oh, I'm actually sick. People
were scared. Yeah. I don't think I ever, I don't think I ever heard anybody talk about anything like this either until really, again, until some more things around social media started. And that's when social media was starting. Well, I don't know. What is time? I can't remember when Instagram and everything really blew up. I think people have been more vocal on there, and that's also helped to just like spread awareness. And that has certainly helped me. And, but yeah, until that, I don't think I'd ever heard anybody talk about having an eating disorder, disordered eating. And I think part of that too, I'm from a very small town, so I don't know if that, how much that played a role in it. I know that like the women in my life, especially have had disordered eating patterns at least and are unaware, right? So there's that piece as well. It's just like the lack of awareness in general.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I appreciate you sharing. And so if people want to get in touch with you, work with you, get help from you, like how can they do that?
Yeah, they can find me on social media at Food Full Circle. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and or also reach out through my website, foodfullcircle.org. And I do accept, I work with clients in I'm licensed in North Carolina, Georgia, and then I work with clients in Virginia and California as well.
That's phenomenal. Great. I will have all that in the show notes. And I really appreciate you coming on, sharing your story. Any last final words before we end?
Join us on the other side. It's so worth it.
It is, for sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Chrissy, thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please rate and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation.